Good morning, good evening, good afternoon, wherever you are, whenever you are. This is Jerome, once again, with Fundamental Principle. Joining me today is my esteemed guest, Mr. Charles Spadil. Charles, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much for having me. It's an honor to be here.
Would you give the listeners just a brief sketch of who you are and why you're here?
Certainly. I'd be happy to. For many years, I was writing both privately and publicly on social dynamics, on the nature of men, on the nature of women, and specifically how the two of them come together, both spiritually and physically, and just the interplay between masculinity and femininity, and how it's been twisted, perverted, and changed and altered in so many ways over the last, I would have to say, 50 years, 60 years, maybe more. But definitely in the last 50, 60 years.
The control pill came out in 63, so.
Yeah, I would say that's an excellent starting point.
Yeah, so, I mean, for those of you who don't know, Charles is active on Twitter. What's your blog again, Charles? I always get it wrong.
No, my handle on Twitter is at Whiskey and Ashes, and I've appeared with you many times on the Thought Crime Syndicate as well. And a few other places I've dropped in, but yes, my Twitter handle is at Whiskey and Ashes. It's not related to my name in any way, so it's a little. I understand why it's difficult for people to forget it quite or to keep in mind. It's very easy to forget.
And you don't write as much as you used to, but there's still the backlog and the blog is. I found I still go back to some old pieces. You know, we're talking 10 years old at this point. But what's the blog again?
The blog is 80 Proof Oinomancy at WordPress, and sadly, no, it's gone dark. I didn't mean to leave it for as long as it did, as it faltered. I mainly turned my attention to COVID 5 years ago now. Goodness gracious, 5 years. And that's where the lion's share of my effort went, because I was doing podcasts on that on my own. I just called the mini casts 8-minute features and such. And I was very active on Twitter at that time, because to me that felt like the most pressing, most important issue to address. And while I am happy to see that all of the things that I pushed and I mentioned were borne out as truth and I was vindicated, unfortunately that did cause my other writing to basically cease. And for those of you out there that go to the gym regularly or do any hobby regularly, you know that once you fall out of the habit, it's incredibly hard to pick it back up. But perhaps one day I'll go back to writing from a different, older perspective and, God willing, more mature, but I still go back to writing from a different perspective and hopefully equally helpful.
Well, we've been friends for many, many years. And so the fact of the matter is that, you know, the biggest problems in our society today stem from an excess of the feminine, and whether that's women not behaving properly, a very feminine people such as the Jews being in charge of things, or very feminine people such as Africans not being disciplined properly and committing crime. An excess of the feminine is, I think, a big part of all of our problems. So, I mean, I think a huge part of the nonsense you deal with is that like women don't have a nature that's different than men, and that nature can't be corrupted. I mean, that's a huge problem in the church today. So could you just talk about female nature and how it's different? I mean, it's all there. Like years ago, we were discussing. It's like, no, it's everything you need
yes,
to know is right there.
I penned this one Genesis, a long time ago, and I stand by it. I firmly believe that. I firmly believe that the book of Genesis is probably the most important thing ever penned by human hands. Absolutely, beyond the shadow of a doubt. Now, I'm sure many people will say that it's divinely inspired, but and that's fine. But it's still the most important thing ever penned by human hands, because it reveals so much if we look at it, and if we take it just slightly deeper than surface value. It has such a wealth of information to it. But since you asked me to address female nature, I'll do my best to try and keep it concise and keep it on target. But obviously, we're dealing with a tremendously complex, tremendously deep issue. I can't just say one thing and then and have it resolve all issues. But I will try and start off with saying, remember, God created man, and then he decided that it was not good for man to be alone. So he created woman. But God didn't create man in the same way he created woman, did he? No. No, he did not. How did God create woman? From the Tell me.
The man.
Exactly. So therefore, he was already working with an inferior material. Man is a fallible, flawed creature. But he was already working with something that was not the, if you want to say, universal substance. And he's also created that from man, which is to say that it is going to come part and parcel with all of man's foibles and then its own, as opposed to starting from whatever divine stuff may have been. So what I'm saying with this, what I'm reading into the work, is that you're not only dealing with man's foibles, you're dealing with foibles all their own, with their own unique nature. And you have to understand that that also implies, being drawn from the man, that it cannot exist without the man. Just like we can't really exist without God, without falling into the very pits of hell themselves, either literally or figuratively, however your audiences choose to interpret that. Women, I don't believe, can live without men, even if they want to claim that they do. I don't think it's possible. I think we've seen this borne out, and not to go too far on a tangent, but it is a related point. I think we've seen this borne out by the more of a wedge we drive between men and women, and the more we separate women from men, we see their dysfunction just exponentially grow. Female alcoholism, historically in America, at least over the last 100 years, has really not been noteworthy. Again, I'm not saying it's zero. I'm not saying it never existed. That would be a complete fallacy. But it hasn't really been statistically significant. However, it is fast becoming so. And also, what has become a veritable epidemic is women on antidepressants. The bitter irony is, the more freedom that we have given them and the more independence we have given them, and by independence, we separate ourselves from one another. There's an upside and a downside to independence. But the more we give them independence from men, the weaker and the more, shall we say, fallen they become. And again, I think that is borne out because they were created from us. And because we are meant to be intrinsically linked to one another. And now that they're on handfuls of antidepressants and alcoholism is on the rise, it's a bitter irony, and it mystifies progressives, to say the least, that that the more independence they've given, the less happy they are.
Right. Well, and not only are they're vastly unhappier, and of course it's difficult to find honest numbers because there's so much AI generated misinformation or you know, obfuscation out there, but something like 40-60% of young women under 40 are on drugs. I mean, all the time. Like you've never met most of the girls. They, like, if you go to college class, you've never met them because they're on drugs. It's like, mm-hmm. If you know, and you've made it no secret, like you're a reformed alcoholic, right?
And, yeah.
And you know, when you were really, really drunk all the time, you're a completely different person, right? And you know, the people who only knew you from your drinking days would be like, hey, this is a completely different guy, because you know, because you're not stoned all the time. And so, right. And women, you know, naturally like seek security.
Yes. Honestly, correct. I mean, because they need it. I mean, that's
I mean,
right. Absolutely. It's the same reason. It's the same reason men seek to work together, because although we're more capable to secure ourselves and our property, that doesn't mean we're, doesn't make us God. It doesn't make us invulnerable. We seek to work together for the same thing, same reasons. Because remember, as tough a fellow as you may be, as capable a fellow as you may be, if I bring four friends with me, that's going to be meaningless, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, this is just to point out that their, excuse me, their search for security is not unreasonable. It's not even remotely unreasonable. It's eminently reasonable. I would argue, in fact, it's probably the most reasonable thing women do. But please, you continue.
So, I mean, 25% of women are 60. This is from the CDC, from, let's see, from September 2020. So this all went up drastically during the last 5 years. But even as much as 5 years ago, a quarter of women over 60 were on antidepressants. 70% of women 18 and over. 18 to 39, 10%. 20% of women 40 to 59. So we're talking, you know, and this exploded during the pandemic.
Oh, absolutely. Well, I mean, during the pandemic.
And other, I forget what category of drug Xanax is, but anti-anxiety medication. I mean, is it 1 in 4? Is it 1 in 5? And I think we make this mistake, right? Like feminism, the lie of feminism is it wanted to prioritize women's sexual preferences by treating them more like men.
And, yes. Yes.
And that's like old ministry talking point that's very true. Like the economics of it is simple. Eggs are expensive, sperm is cheap, and everything else follows from that. Right? Women, you know, like literally give of themselves to bring forth life and court, you know, before modern obstetrics, right? Like women died at, you know, like 20% chance, 25% or whatever the number was, you know. And so a high investment in sexual activity and contraception and feminism of like they can go to work, you know, supposedly lowered the cost, but nature's, you can't change female nature. They still naturally are invested. And so when they have a bunch of partners and they're super invested in every guy that they've been with, they naturally can't pair bond. And I'm sure you've seen the graphs. There's graphs out there of like, you know, successful relationships by number of partners that women have. And it's like a logarithmic curve down.
Yes.
Before marriage, they're pretty likely to be successful. One partner before marriage, they're less likely, but still majority. But if once it's like two or three or four, it craters.
Yeah, it's a matter of fact, there's one, and I don't want to go too far off on this tangent, but I do want to bring it up because I think it's an interesting point. If I recall the graph correctly, and you or your audience are welcome to correct me, but it is, as you point out, a precipitous decline until you get to a certain point, at like a pretty high number, and then it goes back up just ever so slightly. I mean, it doesn't even come close. You'd need a pair of binoculars to see the levels that it achieved previous to that, or the beginning level rather. But it does come up a little bit more, just a little bit. And I always look at that, and that's the part of it that makes me chuckle bitterly, sadly, and with Christian sympathy, but it does make me chuckle a bit, because I think to myself, that must be the point where the ruin and the destruction becomes visible. They have touched the hot stove enough to realize that all of this is so many bitter ashes in their mouths. But that's the one that catches me. But again, I want to be very clear to you and your audience. That uptick is marginal.
Like a, yeah. a like an 8% chance to a 10% chance, but
yes, but in its context, it's significant. And I would argue that that's if I were a betting man, and when I was a drinker, I was very much a betting man, not so much now, but if I were that guy that you brought up earlier, that would be where I placed my money, would be on, I have a feeling that's where the ruin and ruination is visible. That's what I would do.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think that digression is important because it's at the stage, right? But everything is there in Genesis.
Yeah, absolutely.
In Genesis, in sacred scripture. And, you know, the Psalms or Ecclesiastes, Wisdom of Solomon, avoid, you know, like half that book is just like, avoid hoes, my son.
Well, I want to step back to Genesis briefly. And if I recall correctly, and if you want to pull it up in front of you, you're welcome to do so. But if I recall correctly, that's where the line emerged, where it's not good for man to be alone.
Yeah, that's correct. That's Genesis.
And I want to point something out that's, again, very crucial about those words. It is not good for man to be alone. That says two things, not just one. I mean, we could argue it says more, but to me, it says two things. In photography and in my writing, there's a concept called negative space. It's where what you're not showing is just as important as what you are showing. And I think there's some crucial negative space to it is not good for man to be alone. One, it is not good for man to be alone. That means he can be alone. I can go the rest of my life, not that I wish to be, but I could go the rest of my life as the bachelor that I am, as the childless bachelor that I am. I could do it, and I wouldn't necessarily be on fistfuls of antidepressants or have a drinking problem. I could do it, but as God himself said, that's probably not good for me. It's definitely not good for me, but I could do it. However, it is impossible for her to be alone. She is not meant to be alone. She was constructed to be with a man. Full stop. Period. And that's what that sentence says to me. One, that I can be if I have to be. Simply because that's just how life works. Not all of us get a mate for whatever reasons. Good, bad. Fate plays its role. Or sometimes God just says, I need you to do other things. A calling, if you will, whether it be to the collar or to the, you know, or to the coal mine. You know, it could be either one. But that's what that statement says to me. Two very important things.
Absolutely. And men can, as long as they have a mission, men can, like, do things and be on their own. Women, I mean, fall apart.
Right. And this is what I want to be clear on. Like, since I didn't come out and say this earlier, let me state this right now so that I don't forget. Understand what I am doing here today with you. These are statements of what I perceive to be the truth. I am speaking what I believe to be the truth. As I am a servant of Christ, I speak what I believe to be the truth is. Now, I am a human being. I am limited by my senses and by my experiences. So that's why I kind of qualify it with what I perceive to be the truth is. I'm not omniscient. I don't claim to be God. I wouldn't want the job if it was offered to me. So I can only tell you what I see. And what I see is that they are flawed like we are. They live in a fallen world like we do. I am just trying to diagnose problems. To me, this is just a spicier version of, hey, there's oil dripping under your car. Either your filter isn't on tight, or you've got a crack in the pan, or the plug is loose. That's what I'm doing. This is just a spicier version of diagnosing car problems. And I'm trying to get society back up and running insofar as my one sole voice can do.
Well, and critically, right? Like, you know, birth rates are catastrophically low everywhere in the developed world.
Right. Oh.
Like, North Korea is going to be best Korea because there's going to be a North Korea in 100 years. There won't be a South Korea.
Isn't that... that's the bitter irony. It's like, they're going to win because they showed up. Like, that's it.
You need to choose to win, you know, the third Korean War. Right, that's... Because in 50 years, there just won't be any South Koreans to, you know... And you know, South Korean women with that 4Bs movement, they're deeply unhappy people. Like you're not, it's not normal to be like, I hate the men in my society. It's not healthy.
No. Well, and here's, I want to step back to something you said.
Either, you know, like
No. Well, here, okay, there's just so much to unpack here. Let me try and get on a couple of things. First off, men are absolutely not supposed to hate women because they're a gift to you. I mean, this is a religious program. Women are literally a gift to you from God. Why would you throw that in the trash? Not only is that foolish, that's sick, and that's ungrateful. Like, that's, how can you do that?
Right. Plus,
I sincerely ask your audience, how can you do that? Now, does that mean, like if I bring you a puppy, right? If I bring you a puppy and I say, hey, here's, I'm going to call you D because that's what we've called one another for forever. If you'll forgive me, I'll call you D. Yeah. D, if I bring you a puppy, now does that mean you have to let the puppy run around your house and pee on the floor and tear up the furniture? No, of course not. No, of course not. But that also means you still appreciate it for what it's bringing to your life and that it was a gift to you from somebody that cares about you.
Right.
Right.
They're cute. And they're to play with. And
right.
They're great. Puppies are great. Puppies are wonderful. I wish I had a puppy right now.
Right. Right.
You know, there's downsides, right? Like, oh, I got to
walk. Of course.
And pee's on the carpet and get to worry about that. And choose up my shoes or whatever, right? You know, but again, they're downsides to everything, right? Like, and
right.
And what our society has done through the Marxist idea of egalitarianism,
right,
is said, like, not only is there no female nature, to say that there is, like, it's a bad thing, as opposed to the sensible Christian response of, like, men and women are different, and therefore, right, if you had a professional basketball game where you limited the height of everyone on the court to 5'6" being the tallest guy, that's going to be a really boring game.
Well, I mean, let's step back to scripture here. Let's step back.
If you made the Kentucky Derby where all the horses had to carry someone who is NBA sized, that would also be a boring horse race. You want the guy 5'2" to be on you know, the horse jockey and not the guy who's trying to play center for the, you know,
Boston Celtics or something. Yeah.
Right. No, you want a 7-foot tall guy to be the center of the Celtics, and you want, you know, a 5'2" guy to be the guy who's, you know, riding a horse at the Kentucky Derby.
Right. Well, also remember too, like, okay, let's go back to the book of Genesis. Okay. God created man, right? Okay, we agree on that. Scripturally, that's what it says, right?
Yes, of course.
Okay, all right. Well, I mean, I don't play gotcha games. I just want to make sure we're on the same page. Who was woman created for?
For man.
Who was she created for?
For man.
There we go. Man wasn't created for woman. Man was created for God, right? So she was created for man. There's a natural hierarchy there. And not only that, if you take men out of her life, you've taken away her purpose. Okay? You have taken away her whole purpose. That's cruel.
Yes. Well, and even with nuns, if you take away Christ, like the nun's job is to be the mystical spouse of Christ, a man.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right. And again, that's why I say, like, none of this is born.
The most extreme example of, like, you know, literally don't need no man is, right, like the convent of nuns, like, actually they do.
They're right.
Because of a man. Now it's the man God.
But
life.
Right. Yeah. And I would, but again, like I would say, like none of this, I say this because I'm trying to tell people, like, this is their purpose. This is the divine order. And not only that, to either mock that role, like leftists do, is blasphemous, or to denigrate that role is equally cruel. And then to outright deny them that role is just cruelty beyond measure. Right. It's any way you slice it, when you try and drive a wedge between the two, that you're doing evil. You're absolutely doing evil. Okay, now you know, I'm not doxing you in any way, shape, or form. Your audience knows you have children. That's it. Okay. You know, as a father, sometimes you have to do things you don't want to do. As a matter of fact, we've been friends for years. I'm willing to bet there's a lot of times you have to do things you don't want to do. And I say that with all the love in my heart. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Right. But you understand that to love your children, you have to correct them. You have to guide them so that they can be healthy and prosperous, either now or later in life, and so that your family can work towards health and prosperity. Okay? This is the same thing. That's all I'm trying to do. When I bring out my criticisms, when I point these things out, I lay them out. There's no hate in my heart. No. I'm trying to say these things need correcting. And also, it's also the point, well, you're trying to take away my fun. Well, as a parent, it's the same thing as not letting your kid have ice cream for breakfast, you know, or drink salad dressing, you know, or just take scoops full of butter out of the out of the bin, you know, or out of the whatever.
Right.
You know, it's like, yes, I understand that feels good for a little bit. Or no, you can't just eat spoonfuls of cake frosting out of the tin. Like, that's no. Like, yeah, it feels good, but that doesn't mean it's going to be good for you. I can't let you do that. That's all I'm doing.
Maybe you can take a scoop for, like, you know, and put it on a cookie for dessert, maybe every once in a while. But like,
yeah, like, right.
Every day, no. Like, oh, this is my dinner. No, that's not your dinner. Like, sit down and eat some vegetables.
Right, it's right.
That's protein. You're not
yeah.
Live off of Oreos, child.
Right, and that's exactly what I'm doing here. You're trying to kill my buzz. No, I'm really not. I'm trying to tell you that you're gonna have diabetes in the next 6 months if you keep eating this way. Because that's what I've really tried to point out. One of the things that just brought up, I was just speaking with somebody about this yesterday. One of the works that I'm of mine from my blog, 80 Proof White Emancy specifically, I think it's one of the last entries I have. I talk about malnutrition, spiritual and intellectual malnutrition in men and women. And I basically boil it down to this. For the past 60, 70 years, both sexes have been tremendously malnourished. Men have been starved, and women have been fed nothing but junk food. Both are malnourished, but in different ways. Men simply have empty stomachs. Women are full on absolute garbage. Absolute garbage. But both of them are suffering terribly from malnutrition.
And actually, I mean, you make a good point, but it's actually easier to get someone who's been malnourished because of starvation into a healthy position than it is for someone who's been filling up on, you know, Diet Cokes and Oreos.
Yes. Right. Exactly.
Because all you need to do for the person who's been malnourished, you know, like, hypothetically, you could be at a, you know, in a summer camp where there was typhus and everyone was really sick and you were really skinny, and all you need to do is feed that person, like, broth with, you know, and high quality meat broth that has lots of macronutrients in it and micronutrients in it, and they'll start to recover. And, you know, you feed them a good solid diet of you know, good vegetables and high quality proteins, and get them some exercise, and you know, 6 months later they'll be in fantastic shape. Whereas, you know, to extend your metaphor over here a little bit, it's not uncommon for women in America to weigh 300 pounds, which is mm-hmm. astonishing when you think about it. Women weigh 300 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, they're twice as big as they should be. Twice.
In many cases, three times. Yeah. Right, in many cases. More than a few, I'll say. I won't say the preponderance, but more than a few cases.
Women are overweight, and if you're 300 pounds as a woman, unless you're like 7 feet tall, you know, which is like a tenth of a percent of a percent of women, you know, the average woman being, you know, like that big, that's twice as big as you know, even 150 pounds for a woman who's, say, 5 foot seven is on the bigger side, right? Like, not crazy, but you know,
yeah, right.
So you know, twice what they should weigh, and yet that's common for women to be 300 pounds, and that takes years and years and years to lose weight, and they're, you know, they got all the extra skin and all this excess and bad habits. And whereas, you know, if you just took somebody who hadn't eaten for 3 months, been on, you know, like a water diet, you know, someone who's really skinny, they can be back to, you know, they can be back to health in a couple months. Whereas somebody, you know, someone who's been gorging themselves on junk food with no real nutritional value, they're gonna be years in recovery.
Well, yeah, and I think you touched on probably the most important aspect, which is it's also the habits that were formed are going to be what's really tough to undo, because that's now inculcated in behavior. That's now inculcated in a lifestyle. That's now, I mean, we've now fallen into the realm, very likely, of addiction. And now we're fighting a whole different battle. I mean, yes, losing weight is very difficult. Yes, extra skin, etc. I mean, I, all of those, yes, yes, yes. But once you start getting into the realm of addiction, and you start getting into the...
And how many American men are addicted to Diet Coke?
Right, and once you...
100?
Yes.
I mean, it could be 100 million people.
Right.
Are addicted to Diet Coke in America.
Right. And then once, but see, that's the issue. Whereas the person that was just starving, they don't necessarily have any bad habits. And as a gal I was with for a very long time says, and I really like this one, hunger makes the best sauce. So they're just as likely to, if you're starving, and I don't mean like, you know, hey, dad, I'm really hungry. You know, your 8-year-old coming to you. I mean, actual, like, you know, like you said, typhus camp, hungry. An apple is going to look really, really good. You're not going to pass that up so you can grab a bag of Doritos. You're not, you're just going to take the apple because you're hungry. You're truly hungry. And that's where the metaphor continues, is we've been feeding them this junk for so long. Now it's habitualized. Now it's ingrained. And it's, are you ever going to be able to recover from that? Or do we just have to simply start again? That's the real horror, is how many people have we lost? How many people are now irrevocable or irretrievable?
Or dead?
That's, I mean, yeah, that's a question I can't answer. That's one I can't even hope. Yes. Yes.
And we're recording this in mid-September 2025, so Charlie Kirk, rest in peace, was just killed a couple days ago.
Yeah.
And I only bring that up to say that, like, there are women who celebrated that no decent person would want anything to do with them unless they, you know, drastically change their mind. And what in, they're so fallen down, they've been so indulged in the darker side of female nature that I don't know that it would be possible, absent like a total societal collapse, to get them to understand reality.
Yeah, that's exactly the point.
So bad for everybody that, you know, I mean, we're talking, if the United States of America fell apart, billions of people all over the world would die.
Yes. Yes, I had that exact conversation trying to get that through to somebody a few weeks ago. Yes.
Like there's only maybe a dozen places on the world in the world that export food. Canada, the United States, Russia, Ukraine. I mean, there were riots in Africa in 2022 or 2023. I can't remember. Like after the war started, the first like harvest season after the war started, there were riots in Africa because Africans depend on Russia, Ukraine wheat.
Right.
They managed to stabilize things after the, you know, despite the war. But because a lot of the, in Russia, a lot of the fertilizer fields or the gas in Russia is used to make fertilizer. So a lot of places depend on, and there's not that many places in the world that, you know, Japan's a wealthy country. They import food.
Right.
I don't think China is self-sufficient in food.
I don't believe so either. I believe they buy a great deal of meat from us, but I could be wrong. Right. I believe they do.
I mean, they might be like self-sufficient in rice, and you can live off of rice. It's not the ideal diet, but you know, right. But regardless, okay. Millions of women in America have been so gaslit by the idea that they don't need men and that the patriarchy is evil and all this other stuff that is at the heart of like their rebellion that's right there in the book, mm-hmm. that they can't, like, they have no idea. They have no idea just how bad things would get if what they want came to pass.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, absolutely. Right. Yeah. They have no idea. They're clueless, utterly clueless. Well, because again, they haven't had to live with reality. And I think that's really one of the big issues, is that these women have had men in their lives, but everything has been satanically inverted. And you can take that word literally or metaphorically, however you wish. Has been satanic. Yeah, I mean, I'm just saying, however you want to do it. And what I mean by that has been satanically inverted is, what did we establish earlier in this conversation? That woman was created for man, okay? But it has been satanically inverted that now everything is for women. The whole of society is, to quote you, so that a four doesn't, you know, a three and a half doesn't get angry or upset or inconvenienced. If you remember that statement from, you know,
right, I think
a few years back,
I think I said that all of our society is organized around making below average women not pay the consequences for their bad choices.
Right.
Or something.
And now that, yeah, and that's
right, like a,
right. It is. But again, that's the satanic inversion that I'm mentioning, because the order is they exist for us. Now, let me be very clear. That doesn't give us free rein to abuse them. That doesn't give us free rein to crush them into the dirt and have them live at our every whim. But that does mean that there is a certain prioritization that has to occur. Okay? I'm speaking about balance here. Because again, I'll step back briefly. If God gave you a gift, you should be treasuring it, not taking it for granted. Now, it doesn't mean you can't use it. Taking for granted is different than using. And I use, and I employ the word use as charitably as I can. I mean, in a good way. So that's just something I want to make clear. So that's the whole, what's one of the big problems now is this satanic inversion of God says they are for us, but now everything has been inverted to it is for them. And that's not going to work, if for no other reason than that's not the way God said it's going to work. I mean, I can go on to give you plenty of reasons why that's not going to work just materially. If you don't want me to lean on the religious angle, I'm happy to do it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, first off, it's not going to work because God said so. Okay. You don't fight God. That's it.
God is not mocked. I mean,
right. That's it. He's patient. That's all. You know, people think you can mock him because he's patient and forgiving and because he doesn't live on a human timeline. To him, you know, 30 years is as a second, maybe even less. I don't know. I don't pretend to know his mind. But, you know, he's patient, but he still will not be mocked. But if we want to talk about why won't it work in any other fashion, why won't that work if we invert it? Well, also, again, let's stay with the religious just briefly and say, because that's not her role, and that's her curse in this fallen world, that it is Adam's curse to toil endlessly. That's his curse, that he will always have to toil. And her curse is that she will always be ruled over by man. Always. Always and forever.
Right. Well, and feminism, I mean, it's the lie that, like, doing wife stuff for your husband and family is less fulfilling than doing wife stuff for someone at work for a paycheck.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, let's be clear here. Like, even feminism says, okay, well, we're going to usurp God. We're going to undo the curse because we can beat God. That's absolute insanity, but you know, that's what they think. So we're going to free you from these chains, but they didn't. What's the Bechdel test, right? What's the Bechdel test?
Well, I know what it is, but if you could let them.
Yeah, okay. It's this thing that I forget who she was exactly that came up with it, but it's like, oh, well, two women have to have a conversation about something other than men, you know, in a film, you know, or in a work. And it's like, but life doesn't pass the Bechdel test. Very rarely does it pass. If you get a bunch of women in the same room,
what are they?
It won't be long. It won't be long until all of them start talking about men. They just do.
Children or their husbands or both.
Right.
Who's the greatest female novelist?
Oh, I don't know. Who would you say? I wouldn't.
I mean, well,
I couldn't even think.
Okay, well, let me look it up here, because Charles Murray, in his wonderful book *Human Accomplishment*,
Jane Austen. What'd you say?
It's probably Jane Austen. And what does Jane Austen just write about?
Like, how, yeah, right.
Get a boyfriend.
Yeah, right. Well, and again, like, which is here, like, that's the, right.
Like, being a good wife and mom is.
And I would argue that's why she's the greatest authoress. I would argue that's why, because she's playing by the rules God set forth. She's still playing the game that she was given, which is she has to live for men, right? So what's she doing? Okay, if this is what I have to do, then I'm going to lean into it. I'm going to write books about it, and I'm going to tell women how to do this and how to do it right. You know, et cetera. That's how you do it. Because that's another thing. I mentioned this on King Pilled's podcast, and I stand by it. Like, that's another example of God's love for us. He loves us so much that even when he cursed us, he threw us a little treat. Because if you lean in to your curse, if you lean into your toil, if a woman leans in to letting men rule over her, and you have to do it in certain ways, and you have to be savvy about it. Because, you know, God still wants it to be a punishment, but he still loves you so much, there's a little treat. And that little treat is this. If you lean in certain ways, you're going to find you really enjoy it. Or at least it is capable of bringing enjoyment. Like, for example, I consider myself one of the hardest working men on the planet. Most people will never, ever, ever see the work that I do. Why? Because it's not for them. It's for me. And maybe a handful of people that I love. But I am working morning, noon, and night all my time is either spent toiling for other people or for myself and a handful of people I love. But I work tirelessly. And you know what? I like it. There's a lot of times it brings me a lot of joy because I lean into it and because I put it in a certain light. I offer it up and I do it for people that I love. And I'm allowed to love myself. Remember, Christ commanded me to love my neighbor as I love myself. He did not say, love my neighbor more than I love myself. Unless I got a, did I get a bad copy of the Bible or the New Testament? Does your copy say something different than mine?
No, it didn't.
Right. So that's one thing that men have to understand too. You are allowed to love yourself. You are allowed to do that. Matter of fact, I would argue again, going back to that negative space conversation, you are told to love yourself. Because if you hate yourself, how would that command work out for your neighbor? You'd hate your neighbor. And he don't want you to do that either. So all this is to say, he loves us so much that if you lean into your toil in certain healthy ways, you'll get something back. You'll learn to enjoy it. And I say the same thing about women. If they lean in, they'll get something back. They absolutely will. Again, it has to be in certain ways. Choose your target. You know, I have to choose my work. They have to choose their men. But you choose right, it'll come back. It will.
Right. Well, and so I looked it up. Human Accomplishment, Charles Murray, 2003. The highest woman writer was Virginia Woolf, and the highest woman writer overall was the woman. Forgive me, Murasaki Shikibu, the authoress of The Tale of Genji, which of course The Tale of Genji is just a series of romances about Genji, the prince, right, who's has all these love affairs and has all these problems, and you know, it's a story about men and women.
Well, what men have to understand about women, let me jump in here real quick,
who was a feminist, right? Like, she's writing about men and women. Please
continue. Yeah. No, I was just going to say, like, what you have to understand, and this goes back to what you talk about childbirth and its dangers. What you have to understand is, another thing I've written, all of human literature, all of human art, all of it centers around two things. Okay? It centers around two things. Sex and violence. Okay? Sex and conflict. That's what it centers around. Everything. And the reason it centers around that is because those are the two paths to power for human beings. Okay? Violence is the male path to power. Sex is the female path to power. That's why both groups are move in the circles they do. Understand, romance novels are just war novels for women. Okay? Most guys don't understand that. Romance novels are war novels for women. You're reading about the Battle of the Somme or the Battle of the Bulge. She's reading a romance. They're the same thing. They're the same thing. Because that's her path to power. That's her victory. She gets what she needs, what she wants. He gets what he needs, what he wants. Why didn't she pick violence? Because she's bad at it. That's why. I don't blame her. I don't believe any man that says, oh, let's have a fair fight. I don't believe it, because he's going to pick his best attribute. You're going to have a battle of wits with somebody if you have your choice, D. You're going to say, let's speak in a public forum in a battle of wits. Why? Because you're going to win. Very likely. You're extremely intelligent. You're extremely well-spoken. Of course you want to choose that battlefield. But if they say, okay, let's have a knife fight, you know?
No one wins a knife
fight. Yeah, but I mean, you hospital. Yeah, right.
Because I know you, that, you, I'm going to be like, I would rather have a debate than a knife fight.
Right, you know, or let's say, you know, a champion, you know, pistol shooter. Okay, I'm sure you're competent. I have no doubt. But, you know, you know what? Let's just go out on a limb. Let's say you and me. Okay, D, you've offended my honor. I'm gonna pick. Let's have a shootout. You're going to be like, well, I happen to know that you've been federally trained and you've been privately trained and you practice. And like, I don't know. Yeah, exactly. Right. And you would be smart to do that. You're like, no, let's just go on the internet and argue where I can beat you. Right. And that's fine. That would be 100% wise to do that. Every creature on the planet picks the battlefield that suits it best. And that's all women did. They chose emotion. They chose sex. Why? Because they win. Because your IQ drops 30 points when she doesn't wear a bra. Like that's it. It's that simple. That's why they choose
30.
Yeah, right. That's it, right? So she's going to play the game that she knows she can win. And I don't blame her. Why shouldn't she? Because obviously, if you could, you're going to choose the battlefield where you're going to win. But the problem is they have leveled that playing field too much. What they've done is they have completely shut down, they have completely dammed the path of towards power that men use, which is violence. Although I would prefer to say conflict, because you and me can conflict with one another without resorting to physical violence. So they've chosen the path that men use, which is conflict, which can be healthy, like sports. Mm-hmm. You know, we could just play a game. Yeah, go ahead.
It's just war with rules. I mean, what's football?
Yeah, exactly. Right. Okay. They've completely dammed that river while they've completely freed female rivers toward power, sex. They've taken all the blocks off of it, right? And that's why we have the problems we do. And the bitter irony here is, we'll go back to something else you talked about, South Korea, where they're not even having kids. Like, that's the bitter irony. You can take the brakes off of female sexuality, but absolutely nothing's going to happen as far as population increase. And why is that? Like, what's the mystery there? Why doesn't that work? Well, because if you free female sexuality and you chain male sexuality, the world is just one big instance of lesbian bed death.
Mm-hmm.
And that's
Virginia Woolf, right? She was. You know, in a relationship with bunches of women, and, you know, she's the greatest female author ever, and what is her, she was abused as a child, and therefore became, you know, a lesbian, and had relationships with women, and, you know, married a man, and didn't really have, you know, and she was mentally unhealthy, and, right, and this is the greatest woman writer of all time, according to, you know, literary critics and scholars.
And, right.
And so there's it's literally infertile.
Yes. Well, because again, nobody is hunting them. Remember, their sexuality is based upon being hunted. They have to be hunted, right? They want to be hunted. And again, we're not talking about rape. I'm talking about they want to be pursued. They want to be chased, right? Why is that? You talk to any woman that's even remotely honest, and she'll tell you, well, because I want to feel valuable. He's choosing to chase me. Out of all these other women, he's choosing to chase me. That is objective proof that I am desirable. Okay, but if you stop men from chasing women, how does anybody have sex? How does anybody and I'm not even talking about promiscuity, you know, adultery, premarital, I'm not talking about any of that. How does anybody do it, period, full stop? They don't. Like, did you see the more recent report? Like, that's the bitter irony. I said a while ago, like, it's so ironic to me that we live in a world obsessed with sex, but nobody's having it. Mm-hmm. Like, did you see married couples are now down to something like 39% report sex one time a week or more? 39%. These are married people where there should be literally nothing stopping you, not morally, not spiritually, and certainly not physically. Okay, there should be nothing stopping you. You're very likely not in a long distance marriage, very likely. You know, even by this most stringent religion that I can think of, like, you're allowed to sleep with your spouse. Right?
You should be home at least, you know, when you're home.
Right. Well, and I would like, and here's the real crime about, like, so again, all of this ties together, as I like to do on TCS, Thought Crime Syndicate. I try and tie all these together. If your audience has been listening very closely, they'll notice that all of this is interrelated. So when you rob men of the ability to pursue everything, the wheels are just going to come off. Everything's just going to grind to a halt, right? Because nothing's going to get done.
That's exactly right. Well, and so, like, that's why video games are a thing. Because it's an ersatz accomplishment.
Yes, that's exactly why.
Yes. That's why the rise of video games have become a thing.
Right, because they can't stop you from accomplishing things on that. Because nobody can come in and, nobody really can come into your house and shut the game console off. Right? And people misunderstand. Like, the irony is, the irony isn't that the guys are quote unquote sitting around playing video games. That's not the problem. That isn't the problem. That may be a symptom, but that's not the problem. The problem is you're not letting these guys do things in the real world. That's the problem. You've told them they're not wanted. You've told them they're not needed. You've given their jobs to everybody else.
Right.
They're not supposed to build a bridge.
It just came out relatively recently that, you know, the Fortune 500 only like hired 5% white males or something like that. Well, so yeah, literally, you know, you've taken all these accomplished white men, mostly white men, and you've given their jobs to non-whites and women and women, you know, naturally want a man who's smarter, taller, and makes more money than they do. Well, if you're metaphorically and financially cutting them off at the knees, there are women who will be interested in a guy who's 5'2" because he has no legs below the knees and has no money. I mean, there are guys in that sort of situation that do manage to get girlfriends and get married, but it's harder.
Yes. Yes. You're playing on nightmare mode to continue the video game mention. Yeah. Yeah. You're playing, but it can be done. It can be done.
It's just, it's way harder. And it's just like, I do this show because you shouldn't have to be like a nerd who spent 20 years like reading weird theology books and the bell curve and human accomplishment and men and women and all these weird blogs and all this other stuff to save your soul. Right? Like, you should just go to church.
And, yeah.
Like, read the Bible a little bit. And like, in order to be like, okay, this is what the church teaches, and this is like roughly how reality works, so I'm going to navigate my life. But there's so much chaff in the air of, like, you know, feminism, race denialism. I could talk for 3 days about the different, you know, the differences between Jews and Aryans.
Right? Like, yeah.
All these things are, you know, vastly, vastly, vastly lied about. And there's so much non-true things being thrown out there that, you know, there's only 168 hours in a week, right?
Yeah.
And if you spend a huge amount of your time, like, doing things that are unproductive or positively counterproductive, mm-hmm. you have a really hard time, like, living a good life.
Yeah. Like, absolutely true.
You know, and that's basically what we've been doing as a society, is like, women have been like, hey, that's a really nice barn with all the food, all the seed corn for next year. Like, let's burn it down. And like, why are you doing that? Well, because it's in the way of my view. You're like, but that's the seed corn. You can't do that. We'll starve to death. So, but the view is bad. Like, it's ugly. Like, well, I know it's ugly, but it's a barn. It's supposed to be vegetarian. And we don't have the money right now. Like, we can build you a nicer one in a year or two, but we don't, like, right now we need that barn. And they'll be like, but it's ugly. And well, I know it's ugly.
Well, we
just moved out here from on a wagon. You know, we moved out
but wagon. And but again, now we're back to that satanic inversion. But it's ugly. Okay, why does it, I'm not here for you. You're here for me. If it's ugly, you can deal with it until I'm ready to fix it. And since I cherish the gift that I was given, you, I will fix it. But I don't work for you. I'm not here for you. You're here for me.
Right.
And therein is a big problem. And one of the things I find most absolutely vile and reprehensible is that line. I think it's popularized by boomers, but in fairness, it was probably a millennial I heard use it first in my life, or most seriously in my life, rather. And it was, if mama ain't happy, nobody's happy, or happy wife, happy life. There is nothing more satanically inverted than that. Like, absolutely not. If you are doing nothing but trying to keep your spouse happy, I promise you, you will be divorced in 2 years. She will leave you in the blink of an eye. Because the way she was shaped by the Almighty himself, it goes against the grain. And that discomfort is unbearable. Even if she completely doesn't want to do a blessed thing for you, there is something in her shaping, in her forming of her very soul that says it cannot go this way. She has to get away from that. Even if she can't run towards where she should be, she will still run away from where she shouldn't. So that's why that barn analogy that you're talking about is so great. Oh, but it's ugly. Okay, yes. And since I treasure the gift that I was given, I will try and please you when it suits me.
Yeah, well, or when we have the time, when we have the ability.
Right. I would say when it suits me. Right. Again, like I said, you still have to cherish the gift you were given. Absolutely. Right. But go ahead. I don't want to cut you off.
And because women who, you know, there are women in the trades. Like, yeah, okay, bud. Like, they're almost always. not the girliest of girls, right? So because they don't see, I think you've used magic word spells. Like, why was Kamala Harris like completely divorced from reality? Because like Kamala Harris has never had to deal with reality ever in her life,
right?
Like, she's never had to change oil, like fix a broken car when it's 90 degrees out in July, you know. Poor ass.
Well, you know, yeah.
Be up on a ladder, you know, anything like that. Like, she's never had to deal with reality ever. And that's most women, right? Like,
well, yeah. Reality. Well, because they don't have to. They've never had to. Why?
Well, the closest thing.
Because when they're a child. Because when they're a child. Right. Now we're getting back to the war analogy. You know, life, you have to understand, like, when you were kids, okay, your parents did things for you because you couldn't do them for yourself. Okay. Yes. Now, if you're a boy, eventually, you know, dad and even mom will start to say, no, you need to handle this stuff on your own. Okay. And what has happened over the last, you know, 100 years or so, we haven't done the same thing for women. When in the very, very distant past, we used to say, okay, both of you are going to have to start doing things on your own. But we acknowledge the same things that he has to do on his own are not the same things she has to start doing on her own. But she still has to do things on her own. Even if those things are, you know, in the house rather than out of the house, even if those things are a lighter duty than he has, but she still has to do things. She still has to contribute. As a matter of fact, not to go off on a tangent, but I have a tweet out there that's one of my all-time favorites of mine. And it basically says, you could search for it if you like, at Whiskey and Ashes, basically says, in all of Grimm's fairy tales, the most desirable women are the ones that had miserable childhoods. This is not a coincidence, but a lesson. And that's because those women had to learn. They had to learn the harshness of reality. They had to learn that they have to contribute, that there is no free ride just because of their sexual organs. There is no free ride. They have to contribute. And it's only then can they truly start appreciating what men bring them. Safety, security, prosperity. And then they can give more wholly. If you want to use that with an H or a W, that's up to you. They can give more wholly to men and say, hey, I really appreciate what you do for me. Let me contribute to your life what I can. Okay?
Yeah.
Let me contribute to your life what I can. And what a lot of guys fail to see, and I'm going to be a little bit crass here, but I'm still not going to swear. But I'm going to be a little bit crass here. What women have to understand is the whole isn't important. The H-O-L-E isn't important. The whole is, the W-H-O-L-E is important. Okay? Just because you have a whole doesn't mean you're special. What you bring to my life does make you special. And this is why I tell guys, you're allowed to go through your phase of anger. You're allowed to go through your phase of whatever, rage, wrath, anger. Okay? But if you stay in that phase, you are denying yourself some potentially amazing moments. Because I've also written many, many times, no man can see hell without having been with a woman. You can't understand hell until you've known women. However, you will also never understand heaven without them. Because there are some moments I've shared with women, and I'm not even talking necessarily in a sexual sense, but just women I've been romantic with, where I was like, this is one of the greatest moments of my life, and I wouldn't change it for the world. Wouldn't change it for the world. So yeah.
Well, and you know, there are saints out there who thought maybe as much as maybe 1 in 5 or 1 in 10 people had a vocation to the religious life. Okay. Well, that's still like 4 out of 5 people or 9 out of 10 people. Like, God wants you to like get married and have kids.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, of course you require a spouse to do that, and that, you know, marriage is a sacrament of the church for a reason, right? That men and women are different.
Right.
And only the grace of the sacrament enables them to, like, live together and make this work. But also, right, in those kind of, in a good marriage with multiple children, right? Hopefully, every child has brothers and sisters.
Mm-hmm.
And so you you understand boys because you have brothers. And they're all not all boys are the same because you have two brothers. And if you're a boy, you understand sisters, women, better because you have not just your mom, who will love you no matter what, right? Because
right.
You're literally a piece of her.
Mm-hmm.
You know. But you can understand women. And there's this process that people go about of like, we really are strangers to each other. Like, our mental processes are completely different, men and women.
Mm-hmm.
Things that you care about. Women care about people. Men care about things. You know, what mm-hmm. interests them. You know, mm-hmm. you can sit a bunch of boys down that are like 14 and be like, so what would you guys prefer, the Zipfos or the Gladius? And they'll go on for days and days and days about like ancient, you know, like the whole thinking about Rome thing. Like, well, like, mm-hmm. Gladius was cool because it did this, and armor we did that, and maybe this was better, and or arming swords from like 14th century. Like, they're just interested in this stuff, you know.
Right.
Adam Carolla is a bit crass as a comedian, but he's very insightful. And many, many years ago, when he was on the Loveline show, which was the, you know, sexual relationship advice show,
mm-hmm.
one of the funniest things, wisest things I ever heard came up, and I think I saw this on YouTube years ago, right? But he asked, like, you know, a woman called in, he says, before you ask a question, name one plane from World War II. And she couldn't do it.
Yeah.
You know, a Mustang? And he's like, or something like, you know, like, she was very tentative. And then, like, some, like, 15 or 16-year-old kid, who shouldn't have been listening to the show because it was very adult-oriented, but and up too late. But, you know, this 15 or 16-year-old boy calls in, and, you know, he gets asked the same question. And he's like, well, I mean, on our side or like the British ones? Because like our side had these and the British had those and the Germans had those and the Japanese had these. And he just knew. And you know, like my, you know, when my sons were 10, they knew, like, they're 10.
You know, yeah.
They had favorite planes from World War I. My daughters weren't interested in this stuff at all. Like, they just didn't know. And that's okay. Like, women have to be more egalitarian because, you know, when mom makes a birthday cake, she's got to make sure that the biggest kid doesn't take all of it for himself.
Right, right. Yeah, exactly. No, you're exactly right. And I don't want to cut this short too much, but I don't want to go too far into all of this. I want to kind of leave it for other episodes a little bit more. But I want to say real quick, notice what you talked about just there, right? Notice what you talked about. World War II example, and that the boys knew all about it and the girls didn't. Well, that links into what I said earlier. What did I tell you earlier? Everything revolves around two things: sex and violence.
That's right.
Okay, right. And what did I tell you they were? Paths to power.
Right.
Right. What's the boys' path to power?
Violence.
What's the girls' path to power?
Being pretty.
Sex. Right. That's her path to power.
Talking about my daughters here, I don't want to dig
about that. Oh, touche. I'm speaking fair, but I'm trying to speak in the cold real. I understand as a dad. Well, just the point I'm making, you get the point I'm making, is that they don't know about that because they don't need to know about that. That's not how they become powerful. Okay, like you said, it's being pretty. Okay, that's what gets them power. That's what gets them what they want. And that's why all the boys know the fighter planes and they don't. Because what the girls know, and that you're going to have to teach your sons, is the girls know being pretty. The girls know how to outwit them, how to play emotions, how to play your own biology against you. And I am saying, even if your girls, and I'm sure they are the most chaste young women on the planet. Doesn't matter. Because again, when I say sex is the path to power, Remember, when, and I'm not speaking about your daughter specifically, I'm speaking about women in general. It's not sex, the act, that gives them the power. It's the promise of the act that gives them the power. Okay? So they know once they give that up, their leverage plummets. Doesn't disappear, but it plummets because now he knows that he's gotten it. And now it's 50-50. And again, I'm speaking in women in general.
Of course.
Like now she has to be concerned, was I good enough for him to come back? Right? So now her mind has to go in a billion different ways.
To get him to come back.
Well, but see, if only they thought that far ahead now. That's why, had I daughters, the first thing I would say is, I understand you have a different path to power than he does. And I need you to understand that. And I would try and explain these realities in so much as I can. Now, obviously, this is going to be a woman's job far more than mine. Because no matter how much I like to think I've put the work in and the time in, and I flatter myself that I understand them more than literally millions of men on the planet. Go ahead. But
well, I was going to say you do, but the reason women all major in psychology is they don't understand themselves because they've changed so much over the course of a month, right? Like 1 minute,
right,
you know, interested in men, the next they're not, the next they're this, the next they're that. And it's rooted in nature and nature's God. And just acknowledging that reality and then moving on from there. See, this is the problem, is we want to pretend that they're these creatures that are completely different than us, have the same incentives, have the same wants, have the same needs.
Right.
Right. You know, that all those memes of, you know, men will live in an apartment like this and think it's perfectly fine. Right. Where, you know, it's like a box, you know, like a bed with no box spring on the floor, like a really nice gaming setup and like,
right.
Set. Right. Right.
Yeah.
And this is because men don't need that. Men don't need frilly curtains and you know, now maybe they eventually get them because they want a wife and her job is to make the house comfortable. But nevertheless, right, and we'll wrap up here in just a minute, but nevertheless, the important thing isn't that, like, women are bad because their incentives are different, or women are, or men are evil because they want, you know, they want what they want. Mm-hmm. You know, feminists go, well, they're evil for wanting, you know, the thing that they want. Well, sweetheart, the only reason you have a washing machine is some dude who wanted what you've got. figured
yes.
That the less time you spent washing dishes, the more time he could get what he wanted.
I mean, yeah, when it comes but like,
to it, like electricity and running water and all of that. Right.
Yeah, we could talk for hours on this, and you're right. We'll wrap up, but I'll just say one very brief thing, and then I'll let you do your, I'll leave the floor so that you can do your closing. But I will say this, understand a couple very brief things before we end on this note. When you talk about this is how patently absurd thinking we are the same is. Okay. Because as a man, your body doesn't literally break down a significant portion of itself and have to completely reconstruct it. Like, what do you think menstruation is? Like, that's literally instability at the literal core of their being. Do I fault them for that? No, of course not. That's how they're built. That's a feature, not a bug. That's how they're meant to work.
Part of it ain't important because...
Right. Yeah, but am I fool enough to think they should be the same as me? No. And is that showing them any love, treating them the same as I treat myself? No, they can't. They're not geared for that. Like, I don't know why I would why am I expecting a dog to meow or a cat to bark? I don't hate the dog for barking. I don't hate the cat for meowing. I have to understand what they are. This is the same thing. And when you talk about feminists saying, oh, men are wrong to want what they want. Well, everybody just wants what they can't have easily. And that's why women, if you look at all the studies, women generally only want sex if they're having it already. The more sex a woman is having, the more interested in having sex she is. If she's not very interested in having it. And why is that? Because it's easy for them to get. It's not difficult.
Falling off a turnip truck. I
mean, exactly. Right. And why do women want men that are aloof and that are, you know, rarely available? Because they're hard to get, because they can't get them. Why do they want guys that are accomplished and all that? Because they're difficult to get, because they know there's a lot of competition for them. Again, it's that simple. Life is difficult. It is not complex. Those simplicity and ease and ease and complexity are not the same things. Difficulty and complexity are not the same thing.
Yeah. Climbing Mount Everest is simple. You just put one foot in the other until you get to the top. It's hard.
Yes, that's exactly it. That is exactly it. Oh, it's very simple. Exactly. Just keep putting one foot in the other until you get. Yes, you got it. That's brilliantly put. And I guess on that, on your brilliant note, I will let you close out and say goodbye to your audience.
Everyone, hopefully this is the first in a series of many, because this is one of the major issues of our time, and I really couldn't think of anybody better than Charles to address it, because of his just long-term writing about these subjects and deep wisdom on it, while still being both fair and humane about it, which is very difficult. You know, a lot of people who write about this stuff get very bitter. This has been The Fundamental Principle, and I want to thank you for listening. And signing off, this has been Jerome. So have a wonderful day, everyone.